We were in the middle of a very interesting story. We're on page Kuf Hei in the Ein Yaakov, the top of the page. We had learned about this man who had gone with a woman of ill repute. Rabbi Shela gave him lashes. He went to the Romans and started slandering Rabbi Shela. They called in Rabbi Shela and they said, "How come you're judging without a license?" So he said, "Well, this man had relations with a donkey." So they asked him, "Do you have witnesses?" He said, "Yes." Elio showed up. He appeared as though he was a witness. He gave testimony. They asked Rabbi Shela, then, he should have gotten executed. So Rabbi Shela said, "Yeah, but ever since we've been exiled, we no longer have the capacity to give capital punishment. You do whatever you want." So they were analyzing what should they do in this case. And Ademeinebe, as they were analyzing Bedina, had a rule, Patach Rabbi Shela v'amar. So Rabbi Shela declared, and he said the verse in Divrei Hayamim, Lecha Hashem ha-gedula v'ha-gevura v'ha-tiferet v'ha-netzach v'ha-hod kichol b'shamayim v'ha-aretz. To you, Hashem, is the greatness and the might and the glory and the eternal and the praise, for you are everything in the heavens and the earth. So he's giving thanks to Hashem. This miracle happened here. He could have been in trouble. Elio showed up and gave testimony and he was saved. Amrei my kamrit. So the Romans turned to Rabbi Shela and say, "Rabbi, what you whispering? What you mumbling?" Amar lehu. So Rabbi Shela said, "Hachi kamina, this is what I said. Brich achmana, blessed is the merciful one. Deyav malchuta de'ara ken malchuta de'rakia. That he gave kingship, he gave the throne on earth just as the throne is in heaven. Ve'av lechu shultena v'rach medina. And he gave you control and made you people who love justice." I see you're analyzing, you're looking into it. So that verse, which was really a verse of praise, how does that verse conclude? Kichol b'shamayim uvaretz, for all in heaven and in earth give praise to you. So that he was saying that that verse, which says about the praise from heaven and earth, well, the praise from earth is the idea that there's justice, as we discussed many times, the idea that the court down below is called Elohim, is reflective of this idea that the court is supposed to represent God's justice in the world. Hashem says, in order for people to see me in the world, they need to feel like there's justice in the world. And in that sense, the courts represent, so to speak, God's hand in administering justice on earth. So he gave them that interpretation of the verse. And obviously they were very happy with what he said, as we'll see in a second. Yeah?
Doesn't sound very much like justice to me.
Why?
Because the rabbi first of all lied to him and said that he slept with a donkey and not a woman of ill repute, like you had originally said. And then again, saying he's going on and saying that, oh, it's justice that the Romans are here occupying us in our country. That, like, oh, so what, they analyze and they want to do things in court, but how is it justice that the Romans are in Judea in the first place?
I think from other contexts, it seems like all this was going on in Rome, not
in
Judea.
In Rome?
Maybe he lived there. Maybe he was exiled there. I don't know. So maybe he was summoned to court there. I don't know.
I don't understand why that would happen. And where does Eliyahu come from to where he's giving, it sounds to me like false testimony.
Okay. So that we'll have to discuss in a minute. Okay? We'll see the continuation of the story. At any rate, it was one of the hallmarks of the Roman system. That was one of their claims to fame, that they did have a fair justice system. And you see that in the history books as well. In Josephus, you see, they did strive to be fair.
Saying,
they did. I mean, their legal system, their universal code, that was one of their strengths, one of their innovations. It really wasn't their innovation. It's Judaism's innovation, if you look at the Torah. But they adopted it, saying, okay. Amrulei hoil v'chashvinan alaychu yekara demalchuta, being that you respect us, you value us, and you're interested in honoring the throne, Lidunai lechula dina. We're going to appoint you a minister of all justice. You're going to be allowed to judge all court cases. Yav lekulva. So they gave him this big bat, which gave him the right to execute, which gave him the legal right, the legal authority to do whatever he thought was right. Amulei, so they told him, we want you to sit here in Rome. So you see they're talking in Rome. Vedundina, we want you to be one of the judges. Ki hava nafak, as he was leaving. Amaleu gavra, so now that guy who had the court case to begin with, who pulled him to court, said to him, Avdrachman anisa leshakrei hachi? Does God do miracles for liars like this? Good question, right?
Who asked this?
The man who had slept with a woman of ill repute. He says, I know it's a lie. You know it's a lie. And God made a miracle for a liar? Does God do such a thing? What's going on here? Amar le. So before we read his answer, we need an introduction. If we look in the Torah, we see terminology that reflects concepts. The Torah tells us when we leave Egypt that we should redeem a donkey with a sheep, right? It says the firstborn donkey redeemed with a sheep. What's that? So what do we see? What does it tell us in Ezekiel? It says the Egyptians are compared to a donkey. The Jews are compared to a sheep. Verses in Ezekiel, it says, in Yechezkel, v'atem tzoni, tzon mariti, adam atem. Am Yisrael is the tzon. What does it say about the Egyptians? Ashel psach hamurim psaram. They're fleshy and meaty like the donkeys. So you find that the nations are compared to donkeys throughout Tanakh, and even in this idea of redeeming a donkey with a sheep, it's the idea that it's supposed to reflect that we, the Jewish people, were redeemed from the Egyptians, from the hands of the non-Jews. We were redeemed. So the sheep is redeeming the donkey. That's part of the idea of the Torah as mitzvah. And that's an idea that's a recurring theme. So his answer is going to be, what do you want? The nations are, in Tanakhic code, the term donkey doesn't have to mean an animal. Now it's more than that. The word chamor, what does it say? That the Mashiach is going to be a pauper riding on a chamor, riding on a donkey. What does that mean? The Talmud tells us that one of the rabbis once met Eliyahu. He asked him, where is the Mashiach? He told him he's sitting at the gates of Rome. The Mashiach's right there right now. And he's going to come in from there. What does it mean, a poor man riding on a donkey? So there are different interpretations among our sages. One interpretation is that the word chamor comes from the word chomer. Comes from the world, the physical, the material world. Then you have things that are closer to the spiritual world. You have things that are closer to the material world. What did this man do? He did the most materialistic act there is. He took something that has potential to be holy, and he did it in a fashion of a chamor. He did it in a fashion that's all materialistic. So when he came, he says he went and slept with a donkey. What was he saying? Oh, yeah, in English, it's he slept with a donkey. But in Hebrew, he said he slept with the physical world. He didn't have an act of intimacy. He had an act that was kulo chamor, that was kulo chomer. Or you could say, based on the verse in Ezekiel, yeah, he went and slept with someone who was not Jewish. And when you're talking allegorical, just like you have the Republicans and Democrats, you have a donkey and an elephant. Each side is proud. This one's called a donkey and this one's called an elephant. They put it on their flag, right? So if Israel is compared to the sheep and the nations are compared to the donkey, so that's what he answers him. He says to him, "Ama lo rasha velav chamraiku." Isn't that the code of the Tanakh for the nations? Their animal on their flag is the donkey. Our animal is the sheep. Dichtiv ashel psach hamurim psaram. You see, that's what the verse in Ezekiel that we quoted earlier. That's what the verse says. I showed it from a verse in Torah. That in the Torah it's also the code, and it's a repeated code. This division of codes. But okay, chazi davekazi lemei malud dekarin achamah. So what does this wise Alec do? He says, I'm going to go tell the Romans you called them donkeys. Okay, now he's in trouble again. Amar hayrodefu. He said, okay, if he's going to do that, then the Romans could kill me. And we have a halacha that says that if someone's going to go and endanger a Jew's life, so then he's called a rodef. He's one who is threatening someone else's life. The Torah says, if someone's going to come and try to kill you, kill him first. So he picked up his bat, they just gave him a license to kill, and he hit him. Now, if the Romans ask him, you guys told me I should have killed him to begin with, right? I have the testimony, okay. So, he did kill him. And this is halacha that, unfortunately, has been applied other times. When a person, you know, someone's coming at you with a gun, shoot him first. If someone's going to try and cause someone else to get the death penalty illegitimately, so then he has the right to defend himself. So now, okay, game over for this guy. He's standing on the side, Rabbi Sheila. He says, being that I quoted this verse, and miracles happened to me revolving this verse, I'm going to spend some time explaining the verse. Gentlemen, do we have any questions still here? Yes.
I didn't quite understand what you were saying before. Does that imply that if you are a Dayan and someone is in Roman times and someone is threatening to take you to a Roman court, that you can kill them? I'm not understanding something.
Let's see. If someone is threatening to bring him to a case where he can cause him to get the death penalty illegitimately, so then he does have a right to kill him, yeah. And we're talking about Roman times.
So the important thing is that it has to be illegitimate.
Correct.
He can't be defending himself.
Right, it has to be illegitimate, and I'll prove it from stories in Talmud. The Talmud tells us that Rabbi Eliezer ben Rabbi Shimon was a judge on behalf of the Romans, and he caught Jews and executed them on behalf of the Romans. So you see, even though he was working with the Roman system because it was legitimate, it was people who legitimately deserved to be punished or killed, so then that was okay. So then you see the idea of giving over has to be illegitimate. And that's the system we have till today. You know, if a guy is a molester, so then the rabbis will work with the government to put the guy behind bars, and whatever we have to do, we're going to do to take care of him. If the guy is a thief, so we'll work with the government. And this is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. The Rebbe of Chabad writes this in his halachic work, that it's known whenever there'd be a theft, so the cops would come to the rabbis and say, okay, who should we bring in if they thought it was a Jew? Meaning, if it's legitimate that the courts want to put him away, so then that's legitimate. Again, I'm going from one case to the other. And the truth is that the whole idea of Rodev is not about sitting behind bars. It's about sitting behind bars in a system that can execute, and can execute illegitimately. Or a situation where a person can construe it in a way that they will rule illegitimately, such as in this case. We're not talking about a legitimate system. We're talking about an illegitimate system. We're talking about an illegitimate system that can kill, right? And that might kill. Yeah?
Yeah. I wanted to keep that as the same kind of...
There's more to be discussed. You realize you're taking a broad topic, and we're not really doing it justice. The whole idea of Rodef is a broad topic, when you would say Rodef. But from our case, that's what we know.
Is this a Roman court? Because Roman law, you could go to a Roman court, I imagine, wasn't a problem. So this was a Jewish court under Roman jurisdiction? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, Rabbi Shela's court initially was just a Jewish court.
In Rome. So,
right. Now, but it didn't really have Roman jurisdiction. It was just a Jewish court. So you have a Jewish community. He finds out that this person is doing that. He gives them lashes. The guy takes him to court, takes him to Roman court.
Gotcha.
Now he's endangering Rabbi Shela.
Gotcha.
Okay. And then the guy is going to take what Rabbi Shela said and endanger Rabbi Shela by saying, he's been calling you names.
Cool.
Okay, if that's what he's going to do and endanger Rabbi Shela's life, then he becomes a Rodev.
Okay.
Yeah? Nafak lebeit medrash, he went out to the academy, vidarash, and then he started teaching. The verse says, Lecha Hashem HaGedula, to you Hashem is the greatness. What's that talking about? Zema Sebreshit. The term Gdula, greatness, is talking about creation. The greatest greatness is creation. There's nothing, and then there is something. There's void, there's a vacuum, and then there's a world. So that's Gdula. You want to talk about greatness? That's creation. והגבורה אין מית, זו יציאת מצרים, וכן הוא אומר, ויער ישראל את היד הגדולה. You want to see might? Might is when God took out one nation from within the other, the great story of Exodus. התפארת glory, זו חמה ולבנה שעמדו לו ליהושע. You want to know glory? That's when Joshua can make the sun and moon stand still, שנאמר, וידום השם שירח חמד. והנצח, eternity, זה מפלטה של בבל. You want to know what's a sign of eternity? That's the idea that God can will bring down the Babylonian Empire. V'chein hu omer, v'yez nitzcham al begadai. Now, when we read this Gemara, we have to wonder, did the censor play around with the Gemara? Because eternity and Babylon don't really go together.
In the Talmud.
What?
In the Talmud. The Talmud is talking about the Talmud Babylon.
Excuse me, which censor are you talking about? Is this later editor when Christians were coming in and modifying?
In our class, in the intro to the Ein Yaakov, we discussed that there was a period of a few decades where the Christian church forbade any printing of Talmud or Ein Yaakov. And then, after much pleading and begging, they finally permitted us to print the Ein Yaakov. The Talmud was still banned and all copies of Talmud were burnt. But they permitted us to print copies of the Ein Yaakov. After censorship, they had a censor that the church appointed to censor the Ein Yaakov. Then a few decades later, they permitted the printing of the Talmud, again, only after it had undergone the censorship of the church. Now, the censor of the Talmud, who censored far more heavily than the censor of the Ein Yaakov, even though you have sections of, most of the Ein Yaakov comes from the Talmud, 99%. Nonetheless, being that there were different people in charge of censoring the Ein Yaakov and the Talmud, that's why on the Ein Yaakov, you have far less that's censored than the Talmud. The Ein Yaakov, the Rashi on the Ein Yaakov. But over here, you see they put parentheses around the words Shel Bavel, and you have to wonder, what did the original text say? When it says Netzach refers to the downfall of, doesn't say who. Someone put in the words of the Babylonian Empire. Okay, you have to wonder, is that really what the original verse in Talmud said? Again? Anyways, the verse that he's quoting, V'yez nitzcham al begadai, I have sprinkles of their victory on my clothing, it begins like this. Mi ze ba me'edom. Who is that coming out from Edomite territory? Chamutz begadim mi botzra. His clothing are soiled from Batra. Ze hadu bilvusho, something b'rov kocho. It's talking about, he's describing how the final war was waged against Edom. It's not talking about Bavel there. So I'm saying the verse that he's quoting doesn't exactly fit with Bavel if it's talking about. He's saying, Madua adom lilvushecha uvgadecha kidorech begat. So he asks him, why are your clothing all red and it's as though you just went and trampled grapes? So he said, oh, I just went and fought all the enemies and that's what squirted on my clothing. It doesn't seem like it's talking about Bavel there. So the verses, even the verses we're quoting, seem to indicate that it's talking about a final war. But okay. V'ahod zoma palat nachale Arnon shnemar kenim u'bzef mechmot Hashem etvahev b'sufa. Hod, glory, is talking about a spectacular war which we had by the Arnon Valley. Because you control everything in heaven and earth. That's a reference to the war against Sisera, as the verse says, Min Hashamayim Ninchamu, that in that war, even the stars partook of the war, as we discussed only a few weeks ago when we learned the war of Sisera. Lecha Hashem HaMamlecha, Zo Melchemet Amalek. To you Hashem is kingship, so that's the war against Amalek, as we know that Hashem's throne is only complete when we fight the war of Amalek. Shneimar ki yad hakeska, when Hashem has a representative on his throne, when there's a Jewish king, he has the responsibility to fight war against Amalek, because Amalek is the nemesis of Israel in the world. So long as they're around, it's a little hard to understand that Hashem controls the world. If he controls the world, why does he leave them around, right? That Hashem says, when you finally wipe them out, then that's when you have Lecha Hashem HaMamlecha. That's when Hashem's kingship will be recognized. Vamitnasei, you're exalted. Lechol Rosh, Vamitnasei, that's the war of Gog and Magog. What is the war of Gog and Magog? Who knows? Gog and Magog are two nations mentioned in Bereishis, right? And yeah, and well, maybe Gog is the king of Magog, who knows? As the verse says, Inni lecha Gog nesirosh meshech v'tuval. I'm going to come against you, Gog, the head of the areas of Meshech and Tuval. Okay, maybe Gog and Magog is that. What's the numerical value of Gog and Magog? Let's see, Gog is 336, 12. What's Magog? Again, 336, 12, so that's 24. Plus the Mem, 24. Plus 40 is 64. Plus the Vav Umagog is 70. 70 nations. So that's what the verses in Tehillim and Psalms seem to indicate. That it's going to be a massive war of all the nations. And they're all going to unite against who?
Israel.
Right. Looking forward. Lechol Lerosh. Amar Avchanan Baraba. Afilu Resh Galgalta Min Shamaya Mukme. What does it mean, Lechol Lerosh? To all leadership. So here we have an important concept. Guys, listen up. You're going to go to the Misrad HaPnim. There's going to be someone there who says, I need a different paper. You're going to go get that paper and you come back there and she's going to look at you and say, not that one. And you'll say, but you told me. And she'll say, yeah, but not that one. And you'll get her the third paper and she'll say, okay, but did you bring a copy of your Tudat Zehut? You'll say, but you didn't tell me that. And she says, yeah, but it says it on the paper. So you say, okay, you bring her the copy of the Tudat Zehut. And she says, I'm really tired. This is the fourth time you're here. Now it's your fault, right? You didn't bring me a copy of your Sefa, that little piece of paper under the Tudat Zehut. See, look at her. You waited in line. You burnt 4 days of work. You go back and you make a photocopy of your Sefa and you come back to her and she says, excuse me? You didn't bring your Tudat Oleh? You guys been there yet?
Yes.
Ah, yes.
Still going through it,
right? Very similar to that, right?
Change of address 3 times, go in there.
Tells us the Gemara. Amar Rav Chanan Baraba. You might not like this Gemara, but listen, what does the Gemara say? Afilu Reish Gargulta. Even the guy who's in charge of this little plot, who's going to plow the plot? You know, you have a system between the gardeners. This is your turn, this is my turn. And who's the head of all the gardeners? One little gardener who gets to be called the head. But what's his responsibility? To decide who plows which portion. Even that, says the Gemara, afilu reish galguta min shemaya mukme. It's declared from above. Any situation where someone was given control over someone else, that's lechol lerosh. Any position of responsibility for someone else was declared above. In Shemayim, they decided, for whatever reason, this lady or man at Misrad HaPnim is going to be in charge of your tik. Like it or not, now you have to deal with it. It's a very important approach, because sometimes you look at it and you're ready to bite the guy's head off. And then if you think for a second, you say to yourself, okay, why is this challenging to me? Because I'm imagining that my problem is him. Let's think for a minute. I was put in this situation. Yeah, he's a problem. He's a pain in the neck. I'm going to have to deal with him. But I was put in this situation. It could have all gone smoothly. Let me tell you a fantastic story. I came to get a license. So they send me back. You have to pay. I came back and I paid. They sent me back. You had to bring authorization. You paid. You're talking about 6 shekel. He said, I'll give you the 6 shekel. No, I'm not allowed to take the 6 shekel. Go bring authorization. You paid the 6 shekel. I come back. They said, okay, I need another paper from you. I come back a fourth time. They say, according to our records, you're not in the country. I said, but I am in the country. Yeah, they said, but in our records, you're not in the country. I said, so what do you want from me? They said, I don't know. Legally, I can't put out a driver's license for you because you're not in the country. I said, so what am I doing here, right? No, but on our papers, it doesn't show you entered. You must have entered illegally. I said, what do you mean? They said, go bring us a passport and show us the stamp that you entered legally. Okay, fine. I go home. I find the stamp. I bring him back the passport. They say, it doesn't show up on our records. We want you to call the army to get it authorized that you really entered legally. And okay, make a long story short, I still don't have an Israeli driver's license. But I go to a friend of mine and he tells me, why don't you have an Israeli driver's license? I said, it's a long story. He says to me, what's so complicated? I came to Misrad HaPnim, to the Misrad HaRishui. I told them, I want to get a driver's license. The woman behind the counter looked at me and said, you used to drive in the U.S., right? I said, yeah. She said, show me your license. I showed her my license. She said, give me a minute. And 5 minutes later, I had my Israeli driver's license. I said, that's not legal. He says to me, I know. Okay, so I couldn't have that, right? I didn't get that lady. I'm still wondering why, right? I don't know why. But I didn't get such easy treatment. No, I'm still without an Israeli driver's license. Afilu resh ger guta, the Gemara says, even the guy who's in charge of when's going to be your turn to be the one digging the pit, min shemaya mukme, that's decided up above. Some things it's decided you'll have it easy, some things it's decided you'll have it hard. It's not nice to think of it that way. It's much easier to think, he's the problem. Okay, maybe. B'manita tana mishmeid Rabbi Akiva. We have a braisa that quotes in the name Rabbi Akiva. Lecha Hashem agdula zokeat yamsuf. When the verse says, to you Hashem is greatness, that's the splitting of the sea. Agvura the might, zomakat pchorot. That's the plague of the firstborn. Hatiferet zomatan Torah. The glory, that's speaking of the giving of the Torah. Vanetzach eternity zo Yerushalayim. Vahod zo binyan bet amigdash. That's an important idea. You will find time and time again that the word netzach, eternity, is equated with Jerusalem. And those of you who were with us at the Kotel, we discussed this concept. Why is Jerusalem and King David connected with the concept of eternity? The strength of King David, the strength of Jerusalem. Let's continue. We're turning over to the next page where it says 210 on the top right. Tanya, we have a very important Gemara now. People learn the Gemara that says you should be like Avraham Avinu, have a tent that's open on all four sides. But people somehow forget this Gemara. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe says, Le'olam al yarbe adam re'im betoch beito. A person should always be careful not to have too many friends in his house. Balance. You have to have a house, you have to have guests. Not too much. Not too many friends in the house. I get this question about once or twice a year. I'm bringing friends home. I'm bringing learning partners home. And they're too friendly with my wife. Should I still bring them home? No. Don't. If the person doesn't know what proper modesty is, then he doesn't belong there. Shouldn't I tell him something? No. If he doesn't know it, then that's it. He doesn't know it. Someone else is going to have to educate him. Lo'olam al yarbe adam re'im betoch beito. Rebbe says, don't have too many friends at home. Shenemar ish re'im litro'a, as the verse says, a man who has too many friends is self-destructive. And this is one of the things that people sometimes don't know how to do when they get married. You see couples, they're married, they sit together, and they're both on the cell phones. What's going on here? Shut your cell phones. You're going to have supper together, right? But it's my friend, right? So your friend has to know how to give you privacy. The morning after we got married, at 6 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang. 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm wondering, what's the emergency? 6 o'clock in the morning. You know. So I put a voicemail on the answering machine. Back then we had voicemail. Thank you very much for calling. We got married in Teves, right? So I left a voicemail that said, thank you very much for calling. We are busy right now. I will check messages after Tu B'Shvat. That gave me a month and 10 days. Came Tu B'Shvat. I switched the voicemail. Thank you very much for calling. We are busy. We will be checking our voicemail after Purim. Gives me another month. Shvat Adar. And after Purim, I left a voicemail. Thank you very much for calling. We'll be checking our messages after Pesach. 3 months of peace and quiet. People didn't call after that. That's it. Finished. You know. After you get a message like that, you say, okay, I'm not calling. Okay, so you could say that's extreme. I'm not telling you to employ that in your own home. But you have to remember this concept. Too many friends is self-destructive. You can have friends, but a home has to be a home. It can't be Grand Central Station. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, al yimne adam apotropos betoch beito. Next important rule that Rebbe taught. Do not appoint someone in charge in your home. A person is very tempted, let me have a butler, let me have a manager, let me have someone who takes control of things at home. No, says Rebbe. Rebbe was so wealthy, Rebbe had so many businesses, Rebbe lacked nothing. The Talmud says he was as wealthy as Antoninus, the Roman emperor. So he was super wealthy. Yet Rebbe tells us, don't leave a manager, a butler in charge at home. Look at the Torah. What happens? Potiphar appoints Yosef, a tzaddik, the most trustworthy person. He appoints him in charge of his house. What happens? Potiphar has to find out that his wife was trying to seduce Yosef, and Potiphar has to wonder whatever happened between them. The most pious person, Yosef. Yosef a tzaddik. Who else do we call tzaddik? Yosef a tzaddik. We don't say Moshe a tzaddik. We don't say Aaron a tzaddik. We don't say Abraham a tzaddik. Right? Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron. We say Yosef a tzaddik. And even so, Rebbe says from him, we learn, don't appoint someone in the house. There shouldn't be someone who's a steady in charge of the house. To be continued next week, Ms. Hutchins.